Hello and welcome to The Chirp, where we speak with Keen's creative minds. I'm Andrew Michaud, and I'm here with the founder of Music All Around and the Fear of Singing Breakthrough Program. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, I'm Nancy Salwin.
I suppose we'll hop right into it then, Nancy. I noticed on your website you've been involved with music for nearly six decades, if my math is correct. What started that lifelong love and interest?
That's an interesting question. I seem to just sort of naturally gravitate towards music, and I always, even as a little child, found music to be really soothing and comforting and sort of necessary almost for my sense of well-being. I guess also there was a fair amount of music in my home, a lot of recorded music and just sort of singing around the house. And my mom used to take me to peace marches and folk festivals and things like that. So I got to experience some of the pleasures of community music making and community singing at a young age. I also apparently was taken to, this is something I only learned recently from one of the women who used to take care of me, babysit for me when I was a child, is that I was lucky enough to get to go to some Black church services on Sundays in Brooklyn in New York. Didn't know about that until recently, but my reaction was that made so much sense that I really loved that those music making experiences.
Were your parents musicians as well?
No, I mean, my mom sang around the house. My mom was one of these people who said she couldn't sing, but she did sing. My brother, who's much older than me, played a little guitar and sang sometimes. And my dad would sing while we were driving and play the harmonica, but nothing fancy.
Sometimes you don't need fancy to have fun, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's more fun if you're not fancy.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So what inspired you to not only perform, but to teach?
Well, performance was never something I enjoyed when I was younger. I loved to sing by myself. I loved to sing with friends. I loved to sing in, where I grew up in New York, I was really involved with folk music. And so there was a lot of group singing, and I used to go contra dancing, or it was actually country dancing down there in New York. And afterwards we'd go out to bars and we would, get a beer and sing together there in the bars. And so it was, and I would go to singing workshops where I'd learn different kinds of music, usually folk music. But performing, I learned early on, really, it brought out a real fear for me around singing. And I would forget the words, and I would, my voice would shake, and I really didn't enjoy it. And that was the reason for me having kind of like a 15-year break from singing around with other people, except for maybe one particular friend. And then I realized that I was really, really missing that, and that it was a huge, important part of my life, singing and singing with other people, that I needed to fix that. The way I fixed that was by finding people in the neighborhood who were getting together and singing for fun and singing in their living rooms, and we kind of rotated around from house to house and sang together for, I don't know, a period of a year or two. And then I joined a community chorus called Animaterra, a big women's chorus. And kind of one thing led to another. And then my first performing experience that I guess I really enjoyed was just doing a duet with somebody with the chorus backing us up. So it was kind of a slow process. And that stage fright actually informs my teaching a lot, because I know how much being afraid held me back. And it became clear to me at some point that people can't focus or listen or even like compare and contrast and correct themselves around pitch and getting the notes they want when they're in a state of fear. So early on, when I decided I really wanted to get back to music and I was asked by a friend to teach her how to sing, one of the first things I realized was that her anxiety was getting in her way and that we had to deal with that kind of head on. So the journey's been kind of circuitous, I guess.
Do you have a favorite memory in music?
Oh, I couldn't possibly pick out one favorite memory in music because there are so many and they keep coming. I love the experience of voices together, of just being together with other people in sound and voice. I guess a really striking memory was that duet I mentioned. I got to rehearse with somebody whose voice was very compatible with my own, and singing with her was a real high. And then actually performing, that was the first time that I sort of felt sort of an electrifying joy during performing. It hasn't happened that much in a performance situation since, but I often get it in rehearsal situations. And I have a friend, the person who tided me through those dormant years, the friend I mentioned who I would sing with, there's just something about her voice and my voice and the chemistry and the sensibility and her guitar playing and the way it all comes together that there's just kind of a sensory, it's like a pleasure on many levels. You know, it's, I like the sound, I like the feeling, I like the sentiment. So whenever there's moments like that, those are favorite moments.
Do you have a favorite genre or song to sing or teach?
I tend to do a lot of folk music and also music that's kind of derived from African-American spirituals. There was never a decision to do that. But those songs are, there are many songs in those genres that are very accessible, and they're made to be accessible. You know, folk music is made to be sung by ordinary folk. So I'll often choose music like that. I try to keep a few pop songs and sort of easy sort of, what do you call it? Like, I don't know, what would you call a song by the Eagles? You know, like Peaceful Easy Feeling, or, you know, kind of pop rock songs, stuff that's easy for people to kind of join in with and then start to master some of those skills about getting from here to there in a melody and relaxing their throat while they're singing and breathing. They can use these simpler songs to work on their music skills and then also just to discover that they actually are having a really good time.
I wonder, does folk music come from that? All folks are supposed to be able to sing it?
I mean, well, first of all, folk music, I think, refers to the sort of the music that comes out of communities. So the folk music is different of the folk music of different countries is different or different parts of the world. So every country has their own, what I would call a folk music or a traditional music. In our culture, I think when we think folk music, we tend to think of the 60s and the music that was big in the civil rights movement. And that music came out of what I would say is folk traditions. And then people who were connected, sort of, yeah, people, blues musicians, music from the Appalachians, people like Woody Guthrie, who went around the country observing what they saw and really trying to connect with people who were living ordinary lives. And then the people who maybe made those songs famous, like Pete Seeger or Peter, Paul, and Mary, Odetta, or, you know, people who took those songs and used them, Joan Baez, used them to help the civil rights movement and to help equal rights movements, the sort of development of these grassroots movements. They used some of this music and made it into sort of a form of pop, which I think is what we call folk music these days. But it comes from these roots. But it really touched people, and it seemed like music that people could easily sing. Yeah, I think it's the idea of folk music does have to do with being accessible and being people, you know, it's, again, like not fancy music. You don't have to be trained.
So I noticed that you do a little bit of songwriting as well. Do you tend to write folk music style songs, or is there a different genre you like to branch out to?
That's interesting. So how did you find out that I do songwriting?
Oh, I was poking around on your website. There was a blog post about it.
That was my big outing of myself. I have had written two songs that were, you know, real complete songs that I shared with my band, and one of them we played out. After that, I kind of just went dormant. Like, I couldn't think of any more songs. I could come up with fragments, but I couldn't come up with much. I knew that it was something I really wanted to do, was more songwriting. So I asked my husband to get me this book that attracted my attention called How to Write One Song by Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, the band Wilco. This book has been so great for me. His whole attitude is very in line with where I'm coming from anyway with music. which has a lot to do also with improvisation. I am a graduate of a 4-year program in musicianship and leadership from the organization Music for People, which is all about improvising music. So that's a big part of how I love to make music and how I love to teach. I incorporate improvisation not in any kind of a scary or threatening way, but really no, there are no wrong notes kind of attitude, like in the spirit of exploration. With the songwriting, I was getting really hung up, really afraid to write a bad song. And I got this book, and it really reminded me about how fun it is just to be creative and to play. And he gives you a few like prompts and activities, exercises to use as kind of prompts for your writing. And I just found suddenly that it was just flowing. And I've written 10 songs since January, and I've been having so much fun. It's been so much fun. And I don't know. I mean, I think because it's me and my guitar, they sound folky when I sing them and play them. But I'm always curious, like, maybe that one could be, if you got the right accompaniment and the right arrangement and the right instruments, that could have kind of a rock feeling, or this could have a sort of a Broadway musical feeling, or this could have a. So I'm really trying not to get too slotted into some idea of what genre they fit into, because part of the adventure for me is sort of discovering what might happen with them when I collaborate with other people.
So I noticed you were involved in several musical groups. You mentioned Anima Terra. I found the Halcyon Ensemble. You're in a band as well. What do you think is so important about group performance? What makes that special to you?
Well, I can't answer that much about group performance. Performance is fine. It's what most people focus on. But for me, I do perform sometimes, and I'm willing to. But what I love is rehearsing. I love getting together with other people and working out songs and putting together harmonies and figuring out where the breaks are going to be and getting tight with the rhythms and tight with the harmonies. And there can be a little bit of a thrill to performing, but really it's just the making music together that's my great joy. So I sometimes enjoy performing, but I often also feel that performing is the price I have to pay for getting people to rehearse with me and practice and play with me. And it's what's something that's really interesting, a discovery that I made when I started teaching, is that I suppose there's a performance element to teaching and to leading workshops and to leading sing-alongs and all that, the leading work I do. I know there's a performance element to that, but for me, that is a joyful like venue. Like if I'm facilitating other people singing and inviting other people to join me, then, and also I don't know if I mentioned I do early child education, so music education. So in the classroom, just getting a whole bunch of kindergartners to sing with me, like I can really ham it up, be very much more of a performer than I am comfortable being on a stage with my band. Like I have kind of awesome stage presence, I think, when I'm actually teaching and I'm engaging. But if it's performing, it's a little less comfortable for me. But I have learned that, and this is something I share with my students, that for myself, it really works, and I think it does for them as well, to focus on what I love. Rather than, to get out of my uncomfortableness or nervousness around performing, to focus on how much I love the song we're singing, or how much I love the feeling of being in harmony with my bandmates, or maybe there's somebody in the audience who's really smiling, and I love connecting with that person, So it's always to focus on what I love really helps me enjoy performing more. But honestly, it's the making music with more than four other people that I really love.
Oh, wonderful. What gave you the idea to start the Breakthrough program?
Well, as I mentioned, a friend of mine said to me, she was in a chorus with me, and then I was hosting sing-alongs in my house, and she was having a lot of trouble with pitch, just matching notes. And she asked me if I could help her with that, and I said, yeah, sure. And she came, and it was just really fun for me to help her kind of slow down and figure out, what does it feel like to slide my voice up to reach that note? And then how can I bring that experience into the song we're singing and kind of put it together in a way that was different for her and really worked for her. And then I thought, boy, I sure enjoy this. I'm gonna find other ways to make my life be more focused around music. And I started teaching singing lessons, really to beginners in a way that at least at that time, I don't think there were a lot of singing teachers doing that. Singing teachers were basically teaching people who already knew how to sing certain genres or how to sing for the stage or, how to improve their skills. But didn't seem to me at that time that there were very many people teaching people who thought of themselves as non-singers how to sing. It seemed like a real nice niche for me because, as I keep saying, I'm less interested in performance than in community music making anyway. So just getting people into the world of singing felt like a real delight and privilege for me. And then I decided to try to put together a workshop that incorporated simple songs and some songs from other countries and really playful music improvisation games, passing sounds around, call and response, just singing with a drone, which just means one long note. So somebody sings one long note and somebody else matches it. And then while one person's holding the drone, somebody else slides away from the drone. And back to the drone and experiencing like all the sensations that happen with vibration and sound and really kind of getting out of the idea, away from the idea of right and wrong and good and bad, and just sort of experiencing singing for what it really is, which is sound making and sometimes with a goal, and sometimes, the goal would be a song, singing a song accurately, sometimes without a goal. I remember the first workshop I did was just so much fun, and I thought, oh man, I think I'm on to something. And so once I kind of got that feeling like I'm on to something, and I also started teaching early childhood music with an organization called Music Together. I did a training and I became a certified Music Together teacher and center director. It just all started kind of coming together, and one thing led to the next.
So with the COVID-19 pandemic and everybody having to, lock up at home, everything's moved online. And I noticed on your website that you do offer online courses for people. How has that affected your classes and your teaching style, if at all?
Yeah, it was what they call a pivot, right? Well, it was not entirely a pivot for me because I already had a lot of one-on-one students from all over the world doing Zoom lessons with me. So that was something I'd been doing already for, I don't know, 10 years or something like that. So it wasn't like I had to step into something that I'd never done before. And that was lucky for me. But I had not taught my Music Together program online with children, and I really didn't know how that would go. And I hadn't done workshops before, and I didn't know how that would go. And it turns out that it's all really fantastic, that you can still really create a feeling of community online with all those little squares of people in Zoom. It's really pretty neat. And I am very grateful that I'm an improviser because my willingness and pleasure that comes from improvising means that it gives us more ways to interact. And I can unmute everybody for parts of things, like in the kids' classes, I might do, and the workshops, do a warm-up that is unmuted, and everybody's just making sound, and we're all enjoying the cacophony. And I can get us to sing in harmony. You'd have to take the element of time out of it, but if I sing a and somebody else sings a and they can experience that harmony over Zoom. And we can get really silly and make crazy sounds. And so we connect unmuted sometimes. And then when I'm singing a song, I mute everybody. And then I unmute and ask how it went. Anybody got questions? Mute up again. And so everybody gets the experience of singing with me. I'm not going to say it replaces an in-person workshop. There's something super magical about being in a room full of people, like leaning in and singing. Making sounds together and singing together and just feeling all that harmony, but I am really surprised in a happy way how well things have been working over Zoom, and I expect to continue. I was traveling every month for a workshop, and now I think I'm toying with the idea of just doing workshops either 4 or 6 times a year and continuing with the monthly workshops online. And my online program that I have, it's called the Fearless Singers Playground, has a sing-along component, and it had been every month. And for the pandemic, I turned it into being every week. And I think I'm going to keep it that way because it's really rewarding. I mean, who knew? And people can come from anywhere. So I have a student in Thailand right now. I mean, it's really cool. Have to get up really early in the morning, but
How global is your operation here?
right now I have somebody in Thailand. I don't have a lot of people internationally at the moment, but there was a period of time where if you just looked up the word non-singer, my site came up first, which was kind of amazing. And I'm not sure why that was. I think maybe, like I said, a lot of people weren't doing this. So we're singing for non-singers. It would pop right up, be the first thing on the first page. So I was getting people from, I had somebody in Japan and somebody in South Korea and somebody in Australia. And, I was getting people from all over the world. When I finished my book, which I think it's 5 years ago now, the book has a big online component to it. And I had to rebuild the website for that. And something in the coding or something in the ether that I can't put my finger on really changed how I showed up in internet searches. And so I stopped getting quite so many international students contacting me, or potential students and then actual students contacting me. The book, however, has been selling in Europe somewhat. So I think I'm meeting next week with somebody in Germany. So it happens. It doesn't happen as much as it used to, but it's fun.
Well, that's awesome. So, as we're bringing stuff to a close here, I do have one more question for you. What is one thing you wish you could share with the world about finding your voice in music?
I wish that I could share the sense that really there is no such thing as a non-singer, and that if you're one of those people who something happened on your journey from childhood to adulthood, most children love to sing. Something happened, some choral director looked at you funny or told you to mouth the words, or your sister told you to stop singing while you're in the middle of a song. It could be anything. These little things turn out to be really, really big things for people. And then they shut themselves down. And understandably, because they're doing something very heartfelt and emotional, and then they're being told it's not good. And then, generally speaking, years go by, years or the better part of a lifetime goes by, and they just don't engage with singing. They don't sing when people are singing the happy birthday song. They don't sing around the campfire. They only sing in their car or in the shower. They're so self-conscious that they take away all their opportunities. To compare and contrast, how does what I'm hearing compare to what's coming out of my mouth? And being playful, like I say, go back to like being a kid again and exploring and being playful, and take this attitude of you're not going to kill anybody, just make some sound, explore. Except I say it in a nicer, less harsh, more understanding way than that. But that's what I'm inviting people to do, is to come and explore. And I feel like, you go into any given room full of people and you say, how many of you can sing? And half of them say, not me, I can't sing, no way. And sometimes there's even singers pointing at them and going, yeah, that person can't sing, that person shouldn't sing, you don't want to hear them sing. There's like this whole cultural thing about people who don't have like a natural aptitude towards, or I don't have much natural aptitude around singing. And it seems like such a shame to me. It really is a shame, because singing is everybody's birthright. And so I would say find yourself a place where you feel safe and supported and give it a shot. And to you singers out there, stop telling other people they can't sing.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
I don't know. You know what I've been saying lately? Singing is good for everything. It's good for your body. It's physically healthy. It's mentally keeps it's good for staving off Alzheimer's, because it keeps the neural connections zipping and zapping around the brain. It's good for your breathing. It's good for your posture. It's like there's nothing singing isn't good for. It's good for your it's a way of connecting with other people in the world and a way of connecting with what's going on inside yourself. It's like really good for everything.
All right, fantastic. And Nancy, how can people find you if they're interested?
My URL for the adult program, The Fear of Singing, is www.fearofsinging.com. And yeah, you can go there and sort of see all the different programs I have and things, and just reach out, email me if you want to.
All right, wonderful. Well, thank you very much. I hope you have a great night, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. This has been lovely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Chirp. Music provided by composer Nathaniel Bridges. See you next time.